Roses are red, violets are blue, maps that spell out elections are too. You know, elections take emotional tolls. And what do you say we get rid of polls? Welcome to Spectrum West, everybody, where the arts and culture of Western Wisconsin congregates and converses. I'm Al Ross. The book is called Wisconsin Cocktails. This week, we have its author, Jeanette Hurt, with us. We'll talk a little history, and we'll have some fun with that topic. Over the months since we became concerned, and rightly so, with the coronavirus, so many people who make music have had to step back and find ways to make it and teach it in different ways. We're going to talk with two young, innovative, open-minded Eau Claire High School band directors, Dominic Domeyer at Memorial and Scott Hensiak at North. They're figuring it out, and kids are learning more than just the music. And I know I'm dating myself, but are there still candy stripers? If not, there should be. Anyway, like one of those Goodwill ambassadors making rounds to see how each patient and shut-in is doing, Spectrum West continues to check on neighbors in the arts to find out how they're staying loose and upbeat. Symphony orchestras dot our West Wisconsin landscape. Robin Fossum plays violin with the Red Cedar Symphony and is president of the RCSO board. We'll talk to her in just a few minutes. But what do you say we begin with the Chippewa Valley Symphony under the direction of Nobuyoshi Yasuda? Always fun talking with Nobu. I called his UW Eau Claire Haas Fine Arts Center office the other day, and I began by commenting on the positive vibes coming from the symphony website. You've got that wonderful series called Local Color going on, and you're the guy on episode 6. The first five had French horn player, violin, cello, trombone, clarinet, with the message, musicians are practicing, and everybody cannot wait to perform, although they're going to have to wait. So tell me about that Local Color thing. Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, actually, it was not my idea. You know, after basically this pandemic thing happened, every single concert, including university and everything, got canceled. So then during summer, outside was so nice. I was walking, you know, then driving sometimes, you know. It seems to be, you know, everything's normal. Mm-hmm. But it is not normal, right? So then Anna, actually, our executive director, she approached me, you know, I'm interested in actually doing this, playing some music, you know, in front of those murals. I think this is great because I was seeking for some venue to outreach, you know, community people, sure, or, you know, from Chippewa Valley Symphony. Mm-hmm. And initially we were thinking maybe, you know, we get some musicians and then we can make a kind of a virtual, you know, like a performance, and then we can just kind of circulate through like a YouTube or something link, you know.
Yeah.
We just couldn't really, especially at the time, it was like still June or May, June. We didn't even know the safety of,
yes,
you know, doing,
sure,
those things. And everybody was still really nervous. You know, still we are kind of nervous, but we kind of know, you know what to do in a way,
yeah,
you know. So, so anyways, Anna basically kind of came up with the idea. There are so many wonderful, beautiful murals in Eau Claire. And, you know, after she mentions that, every time I drive through, like, downtown, area,
yeah,
there are so many of those beautiful murals. Funny thing is, it has been there, right? But I never saw that. So after I started seeing it, then I basically told Anna, this is a wonderful idea. Just why don't we just ask some musicians if they are, you know, they are willing to play a little tune and then just share some greetings, you,
sure,
know, with,
yeah,
the community. So that's how it happened.
That's very nice. Is that going to continue?
I don't know. I mean, because it's going to be cold from now on.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, actually, you know what? That was probably 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I was asked to do one more as a final,
yes,
thing. It was so cold. I was actually outside,
oh,
in my,
were,
jacket.
Oh.
I borrowed actually a very cheap violin from the university. And I was outside, but I couldn't play. The videographer, you know, person told me that, okay, if you can't play, it's okay, but could you at least, you know, give us some kind of a message? I don't know, my body was really cold or something. My brain was completely shutting off. I usually, you know, get so many ideas coming to my brain, but at that day, I was like, I was looking for words, and I basically had to tell him, I'm sorry.
It's a wonderful idea, and I urge people to go to the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra website and view those. On the website as well, there's a 36-minute video of the symphony performing the Reformation Symphony by Mendelssohn. Was that last year?
Yeah, it was actually last year, the second season.
The second
season
at the Pablo
concert, right.
Okay. The longer this pandemic goes, the more moving it is to watch that kind of stuff. You feel melancholy that you haven't seen something like that in a while, and you wonder how long it's going to be till you see another one. But if you're in the right frame of mind, you come to the conclusion that you are never, ever going to take things like that for granted again.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, I think everybody's now really realized that when everything is normal, this happens, you know.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. We are thrown into this really strange reality. Yeah.
You know, we can regret missing concerts in the past, but going forward, we can promise ourselves when this all goes away, we will not miss opportunities, because now we know that we never know when those opportunities might be taken away. From now on, after this is gone, there's a couple, you're in the kitchen, they go, you know, there's a symphony concert tomorrow night, should we go? And instead of going, I was going to watch TV, now you're going to go, yeah, we're going.
Yep, you can't really substitute, the live performance.
We're on the phone with Nobu Yasuda, music director, Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. I think the cello player who was on your series, Local Color, she talked about how kind of excruciating it is not being able to get together. That's the quote I wrote on my notes here. Playing with other musicians, in your mind, how much of the definition of a musician has to do with playing with other people? Is that like 90% of it?
So I'm a strong believer of live performance versus any kind of a recording or videotaped. I mean, of course, it is wonderful to have the recording and a videotape technology at this moment. It's wonderful. However, I think now, even, in this kind of a technology society, I think everybody, including my students here, so they are always into technology, but they really now appreciate seeing each other, talking to each other, actually, And especially, when you make music, we feel together, right? We share that feeling of music when we rehearse or perform. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, to me, the music is actually, it's a communication, between people. It's not just the musicians, but we share some feeling, between musicians. That feeling is now shared by the audience.
There's a connection between people they may not have realized. So from now on, no one's going to come to a rehearsal and think that it's drudgery. People are pining for that stuff. And I heard musicians were turning inward and they were working on themselves as musicians. That's good. That's looking on the positive side, the bright side. That's making the most of the lemons they've been given. The other thing that you discover is the orchestra itself is quite a melting pot of individuals. And you must, as the director of the thing, marvel at how many different kinds of individuals there are in a thing like the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah, it is actually true. Unlike other, orchestras in other cities, our orchestra is based on our local musicians. About 10 years ago, might be already 15 years ago, but there was a kind of a turning point right there. Many people wanted to actually see, more growth of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. I asked the board members, which direction you want to see? Something like other orchestras, for example, like La Crosse, Fox Valley, or at the time, Green Bay Symphony. You hire some musicians from other big cities, or you want to continue what we have been doing, as an orchestra with local musicians. Nobody actually questioned about it. We want to stay as an orchestra with local musicians.
And that's not the easiest route to take all the time, is it?
It is not easy, actually. As you said, when you say, our orchestra is coming from local, it sounds like, no diversity, but there are more diversity, actually, in there, because our local musicians, most of them are not professional, musicians, right?
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Other big orchestras, basically, they hire professional musicians from many big cities. There's no diversity. It's there, just professional. I shouldn't say just, but they are hiring professional musicians.
Yeah.
But here, I mean, there are so many different people doing many other stuff. It's just they come to perform simply with the love of music.
Yeah, and that's how it should be.
Yeah, and then also our motto, music you love by people you know. That's another thing. Is that, you know, the audience comes, they know who they are on stage performing music.
And the people on stage are performing for their neighbors, quote unquote.
Right.
Well, I have to tell you in parting here that I remember you and I talking over the years and you imparting your vision of having a new performing arts center. And you used to tell me how you pictured yourself on a stage. And then suddenly it became a reality and everyone was so happy and proud. And now that has been taken away from us, at least temporarily, but I want to plant another vision in your head. When this all comes back, Nobu, audiences are going to be huge and they're going to be very loud.
Right. I'm actually, there's no doubt about it. Actually, I'm kind of telling everybody, right now, I am hibernating. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Hibernating means that you don't quit. Hibernate to save your energy. Preparing yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just realized the other day, weekend comes every week to me now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because until this year, until March, I should say, like November, December, I don't have any weekend because I'm rehearsing or performing. But now I just realized, okay, Friday came. Oh, Saturday, Sunday. There's no schedule. Oh, I have a weekend. The following week, same. Friday came, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, it continues for a while. This is kind of nice.
Man.
But at the same time, though, I'm always at the cafe, like studying, you know, for 5 or 6 hours, actually. Last Saturday, I showed up at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I realized that it was at 5 o'clock p.m. Because, you know, I don't have any time scheduled, so I just go there and start studying something, and I don't have to worry about it. So, yeah, I'm just hibernating, studying inside, and then I'm preparing for that.
You're like a big bear sleeping in a den. So the silver lining for Nobu is the fact that you've discovered the weekend. And you know what? It would be so wonderful if our renaissance happens in the spring of the year, but I have a feeling that no matter what time of the year it finally happens, it's going to feel like spring, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Nobu, always a pleasure talking with you. Keep up all that wonderful work. Enjoy the hibernation, and and we look forward to the day when we can applaud as you walk out on the stage again. So keep us in the loop. Stay in touch.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And to view their videos and to keep in step, the website is cvsymphony.org. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, where support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, dedicated to investing in partnerships and offering Charter Bank business services with small business loans, treasury management services, and a variety of checking accounts. Details are at charterbank.bank. The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra, based in Rice Lake, is a group of dedicated musicians on hold, doing what they can to stay in shape, wondering when they'll take the stage again. They have a loyal following and perform at various venues around the Rice Lake area. Board President Robin Fossum was kind enough to spend a few minutes providing an update. Well, I received the latest Red Cedar Symphony newsletter, and the first segment was a rather uplifting one with the headline, "Thanks, everyone, and see you on the other side." It mentioned cancellation of the fall concerts as well as the February of 2021 homegrown concert, leaving the door open for some spring concerts with the caveat that it all depends on the pandemic road and where it leads. So that wasn't the uplifting mention. What followed was the assurance that when all is said and done, when the dust clears, when the clouds give way to sunshine, the Red Cedar Symphony will be here, ready to perform again. Tell me about what exists in the form of support that allows you guys to make that kind of pledge.
We have been very fortunate with the Red Cedar Symphony, 37 years performing, and our board has become very active in the past, five, 6 years. And we have campaigns, have a wonderful newsletter, and we are very grateful to our donors. We also started for the first time advertising donors' businesses in our programs. At the moment, we are in a comfortable place, and we were very fortunate. We were one of the few orchestras. We had our concerts last March.
Yes.
Just before it all happened, mm-hmm. And I think we're the only group that were able to perform, and we were very lucky in that case.
And I likened it, when I read that, to when a football team scores just before halftime. It gave you some momentum. Does it feel that way looking back?
Absolutely. And even though there are only a few orchestras in this area, we tend to schedule our concerts a bit earlier than anyone else, because once you get into spring, it's very hard to find a date. So uh-huh. We've just been very fortunate that we got the concert in. I will add that the executive committee did meet via teleconference
sure.
last week, and it was unanimous. We do have to cancel our upcoming concerts in the spring.
Ah, so you've made that decision.
Yeah, decision has been made, and our maestro, Ivar Lundy, he will then continue on. He has a contract with us until 2022.
Cool.
We'll have the whole new season, and we'll do it next year.
Good. Robin Fossum on the phone with us. She is board chair of the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra. They're based in Rice Lake, and they perform around that area and are one of the prides of West and Northwest Wisconsin. What are you doing as a musical aggregation to keep people who are members loose and maintaining their chops?
Well, I must admit, not too much at this time. Everybody is practicing. I know the Northwood Strings have had a great outreach, and I participated in their last one for their students.
Yeah.
The one difficulty I think we do have, and I have in my case, we do not have DSL or cable available in many of our homes up here.
Oh.
So to do a Zoom meeting, it's very difficult. The connections are not good.
Okay.
So that is a small problem living out of a metropolitan area. I wish it was better, but we don't have that flexibility.
It's tough for musicians to keep doing what they're doing. And now, given the fact that you just announced that your spring concerts will not happen, they're going to have to continue doing that. But we're here to provide them with moral support and say, keep it up. We're looking forward to the day when you guys can be back on stage, and we'll be there. I just had a conversation with Nobu about the Chippewa Valley Symphony, and I said, you know, the one real consolation is that you can lie in bed at night and imagine that first concert when you're back, because there's going to be lots of people there, and it's going to be real loud.
Exactly. We're looking forward to that, too. And at the end of all my notes and emails to my friends, I write, keep practicing.
Sure. And let's point out that your website is a good source of information for people to follow your situation, and I hear that it's looking better than ever.
Yes, we have a wonderful website, managed half in kind, and we're grateful. And we do have previous concerts on the website. You can click and listen.
Okay. And any announcements that are of note, they will be there?
Yes, updated as often as we can with new information, redcedarsymphony.org.
Okay. Does the symphony have a Facebook page, too?
We do have a Facebook page, concert information, or the best classical musical jokes you want to find.
Well, there you go. And you got to have those, especially at this time. Robin Fossum, thanks for your time and your efforts, of course, in keeping one of our favorite music entities vibrating. And as I said previously, keep us posted. People are going to be there in droves eventually.
Thank you, Al. The Red Cedar Symphony will be back.
And their website is redcedarsymphony.org. For friends and fans of Ivar Lundy Jr., Robin also told me that he had a recent knee operation of some kind and is doing well. So that's good news. Coming up, we'll be talking about the book, Wisconsin Cocktails. It's an interesting book, believe me. The Heide Center in Chippewa Falls made an exciting announcement. You can join Emmy Award-winning actor, director, singer-songwriter Jeff Daniels on Thursday, December 17th at 8 o'clock for an intimate concert experience full of original songs, personal stories from his stage and movie career that only he can tell, and plenty of smiles. And if you've been to either of his shows at the Heidi Center, he's a darn good guitar player and singer-songwriter. And then there's going to be a 15 to 30 minute audience question and answer period following the show. The website is cvca.net. That again is December 17th. Looking forward to that. Another group of individuals who are working to keep the music alive, all while teaching it and other valuable lessons to young people, are music teachers and band directors at schools up, down, and across western Wisconsin. The Eau Claire Memorial Jazz One group recently produced a virtual performance of the tune Prime Time, and that vaulted me to a point of curiosity about how Eau Claire's two public high schools, Memorial and North, are doing. Both with very healthy music programs under the leadership of energetic young musicians themselves. I called Memorial's music man, Dominic Domeyer, and North's harmonious husky, Scott Hensiak. And you guys worked so well together within a conversation last year, so here we are all back together again in much different times. Thank you guys for taking time to participate.
Yeah, thanks for thinking of reaching out.
Yeah, we appreciate your curiosity about what's going on.
I'm very interested in the evolution of your programs. High school music is a very important phase of training for a young musician. It's where roots are really kind of laid down, or not, for music being a part of life going forward. Tell me how you guys, as teachers of music programs, have evolved since last March when things, as we know them, collapsed. It was about 2.5 months of treading water for the remainder of last school year, then a summer that allowed for a lot more planning, and now a school year with restrictions that really haven't changed, or maybe they have. We'll get to specific things that you guys are doing in a bit, but generally, the mindset that you're using to approach things. And Dominic, I'll hand the ball first to you, and then you can pass it to Scott when you're ready.
Sure. Al, as I'm sure you know, music in the Eau Claire School District, at least, is 100% online this year. Students, when they're in their hybrid learning model, the two at-home learning days, those are the days we get to interact with our students. We meet over video conference and try our best to make music with the resources we have. For me personally, an important thing that we've been trying to do is make sure that we really have our priorities set in order, that with less instructional time, we really have to make sure that we make the most out of it. So with less time, what comes to the top?
How do those 2 days that you're getting this year compare to what you would be doing normally? Is that an everyday thing normally?
The majority of our ensembles meet every single day during a regular school year.
Okay.
And we have a couple, some of the early bird jazz bands meet every other day, but our face-to-face instruction right now through online video conferencing is limited to 2 days a week, 40% instructional time with some learning activities and assignments on the other 3 days. We have to be really intentional with the tunes we have students working on, the things that we have students practice, to make the most out of less instructional time.
Okay. So now let's see how that compares with what Scott's doing over at North.
Well, that's exactly what Dominic is saying about being very intentional about what we're having our students do, and all of that is extremely important. One thing that's really interesting, and I'm sure we'll talk about that further, is how having students at home virtually going through their band classes has changed the routine. And as you can hear myself, actually, I'm at home with my little guy who's homesick today.
I figured somebody was at home.
He just finished his bottle, and now he's all about it.
Sure, sure. Well, we can handle it.
So even at-home challenges, and I wouldn't call my son a challenge by any means, but but having students be at home brings all sorts of new things into the ballgame. So it's really kind of affected how we're approaching things, even such as music choice, like Dominic is mentioning.
What kind of specific things are brought into the ballgame?
Specific things that we are taking into consideration include how how we approach the experiences our kids are working on. So mm-hmm. when we have an online class in real time with 20 students or more approaching that in a remote learning setting via video call is really unique.
Yeah. So we've talked about how you guys are operating and what the students have to endure, for lack of a better word. What are students saying to you? Are you getting feedback on how this is all going? Because I have a feeling that, you know, for those 2.5 months that you guys had to do what you had to do last school year, you really didn't think at that time that this was going to happen again in the fall, but here it is. Did people get used to it? Are they getting antsy about it? What are kids saying?
If you don't mind me jumping in.
Nope.
When we initially started a remote learning format in the spring, we went into it thinking we would be in a remote learning environment for about 2 weeks. We didn't know that this whole thing was going to end up lasting the rest of the school year, let alone into this school year. So the attitude, I mean, we've always had kind of a good face on with making it as meaningful as possible, but the attitude from the get-go has been kind of building the plane as you're flying it.
Sure. How about you, Dominic? What are your guys and gals telling you?
I think overwhelmingly, students, of course, are hopeful that we can make music together in person and would much prefer that, but are grateful that we can still have music as part of the school day, and they can still make music in meaningful ways, interact with the peers and their friends, people they've come to know mm-hmm. inside of music. And there are some really unique positives about the school year, too, even if it is kind of a challenging situation. It's great to learn more about students. You know, every so often there's a dog or a cat that jumps into the screen or what have you. It's great to see that personal side of students, too.
That's Dominic Dohmeyer. He's band director at Eau Claire Memorial High School. And on the other line, playing dad as much as he is teacher, Scott Hensiak, North High School's band director. What are you observing in the kids? And what do you see this experience adding to their repertoire, so to speak? I mean, I hear professional musicians saying that they're using the time to get better, to tweak things they don't normally have time for. Are you worried that students who have a ton of music aptitude, who might and maybe should consider post-secondary music education, are you concerned of some of them possibly losing some of the spark?
I don't think so. The motivation just looks a lot different this year, right? Instead of having in-person performances or the thrill or the fire lit under you of collaborating with people in real time, there's a lot of students really interested in some unique projects this year too, taking advantage of maybe a little bit more flexible schedule to look into some different projects that they're looking on or start recording themselves or making videos. Kind of the crazy part about this whole year is music is being made the same way across the board right now, that mm-hmm. professionals and high school musicians alike, in order to make music happen, it's all recording at home in your kitchen, in your bedroom, mixing and mastering things together afterwards.
In some of the notes that you guys were kind enough to send prior to our conversation, Scott, you talked about technology use and acquisition. That was one of your final points. You have implemented new equipment to facilitate online learning in band. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that.
One of the initial challenges with working remotely is how can we make things sound the best we can going out to our students and make their experience as seamless as possible. Mm-hmm. One of the things, I believe the Memorial Band Boosters across town and ours at North help support was the purchase of a special soundboard that can plug into the computer so we can handle, pick him up here.
Going to be a singer, that kid.
Yeah. That special equipment has helped us just to create as seamless of an experience as possible for our kids, and we're able to pump recordings directly into the feed without requiring the software to do it, which makes things work a little smoother, and that's been a big help for sure.
And Dominic, that video that I alluded to at the beginning, you planning on more of those? Because I have a feeling that kind of thing was uplifting.
Yeah, I would certainly like to. With the year standing as it is and the virus continuing as it is, mm-hmm. The big question is always time. editing videos and things like that are awesome performances and it will absolutely be part of the year. It's just finding the time and the resources to make those things happen. I would love to. I think it's really valuable for students. It's also really nice to have kind of a memento for the year, too. In a normal school year when we have concerts, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, community comes and sees it, but then the concert ends and it's over. One positive about these videos is you can send it to whoever you want, uncle who lives in California or friends wherever. You can look back at these and you can share it with as many people as you can.
Are you guys having dreams at night about things back at normal?
Yeah, I've been for a long time.
For about six months now.
Wow.
I think the biggest thing, too, with the virtual ensemble type projects, the video that Dominic was able to produce, I think one of the big points as well to hone in on is that helps give our students something to shoot for. In the band world and music world in general, we deal with what's called project-based learning. We're working on a long-term project over many weeks. Typically, that looks like a concert, but how can we recreate that now when we're basically not allowed to be together in person? And I think that's a big way we can help do that.
Yeah. That's Scott Hensiak, North High School band director. Dominic Dohmeyer on the other line. He's band director at Eau Claire Memorial. It is not easy what you guys are doing. You were good educators without a pandemic, and now you're showing colors that we all appreciate even more. So keep that front line active, and we look forward to your first public performances again, full venues and loud audiences. So you have that to look forward to.
That'll be a great day.
Oh, we can't wait.
Good deal. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Al.
Thanks, Al.
Our young people are in good hands. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. Thanks so much for being with us, as usual. Support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, committed to delivering an authentic and enjoyable automotive experience. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. You know, when a book surfaces with the title Wisconsin Cocktails, you should know it's going to catch my attention. So many books, so many topics, yet not many about beverages of the adult variety. It's from the University of Wisconsin Press, written and compiled by author Jeanette Hurt, a resident of the north of Milwaukee village of Bayside. It mentions many libations and how to create them, but it also bows to what is considered the complete and official Wisconsin cocktail, the Brandy Old Fashioned. We'll only be able to scratch the surface of all that's on the pages of Wisconsin Cocktails, but what do you say? Let's begin scratching. I see you did a book on cheese as well. We had Jerry Apps on the show not long ago. He did a real inclusive book on cheese. I did not realize cheese had so much clout, but cheese and cocktails are kind of the big 1-2 punch in Wisconsin, aren't they?
I think it is. Yeah. And that's why I have a whole chapter on pairing cheese with cocktails and pairing cheese with spirits. I did write 3 books on cheese, including a book on Wisconsin cheese. I wrote a book on wine and food pairing, and that got me interested. And, of course, cheese, of course, is fantastic, but so are cocktails. As far as I know, I'm probably one of the only people I know who's written both books on cocktails and on cheese. We're used to adding cheese to our cocktails, our Bloody Marys, but you can also add mascarpone cheese to a Tom and Jerry, and it's really, really decadent.
Oh, my. Is that in your book?
Yes, of course it is.
Okay, good. And I have the book, thank goodness. Well, speaking of book, it's very cool. It has lots of how-tos, but it also has a lot of who's and why's and wherefores and when's. For those who do imbibe out there, most just sip. They don't usually read about their highball, but here's their opportunity to be knowledgeable about it all.
If you go on a state-by-state basis, there are some states and regions that have very rich drinking cocktail cultures, places like New Orleans, Kentucky, but I would argue that Wisconsin has as good or a better cocktail culture than any of these places. We never had a dark days of cocktails, and any corner tavern or sports bar should know how to make an old-fashioned.
I should point out to you that I did have an old-fashioned over the weekend. I had told you earlier that I had never had one. It was good. I had a sweet one. But to show you how unsophisticated I am, either I never knew it or I'd completely forgotten that brandy is basically a cousin to wine. Now I know all that stuff again. Here's something that I don't think is spelled out in the book, but I certainly have a curiosity about it. Where did the actual word cocktail come from?
There's a couple of different origins they talk about. One of the things, a cock's tail feathers from a rooster used to stir the drink. Or more likely, the term itself came from a drink that wasn't a cocktail, but they called it a cocktail. What they used to do in the old days when they were selling horses, they'd make sure that their tails were cocked or jaunty, so it became known as a pick-me-up. And then eventually that term was used for cocktails, which I guess cocktails can be a pick-me-up.
Where did the term highball come from?
The term highball, that's interesting. I'm not sure exactly where that came from.
Okay.
I believe it came partly from the glasses. A highball is basically something bubbly mixed with a spirit.
Yeah. I want to point out that there are some great quotes within this book, some of which I'm going to pass along, like this one from the book's foreword, which was offered by Robert Simonson. He calls Wisconsin culture, quote, the no-nonsense, trend-adverse nature of the citizenry who, over the years, have seen few reasons to change what ain't broken, drinking preferences included, unquote. And I, for one, believe that Wisconsin, or a sizable faction of it, is like a drink on the rocks that sits too long, becoming a bit more and more diluted with each new, let's say, half generation, simply because of the multitude of choices being tossed at us today. But I'm going to ask you if the dyed-in-the-wool or the soaked-in-the-brandy folks, are they hanging in there or are becoming fewer and farther between?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things is if you go to almost any modern or hip cocktail bar out there, they will have a version of the brandy old-fashioned on the menu. Usually, it's got a twist to it. For example, if you go to Lost Whale, which is in Bayview in Milwaukee, they have barrel-aged brandy old-fashioneds on tap. Those are really good and pretty easy if you have your own barrel at home to make, which you can buy. But if you go to other interesting places, they will do their own version of it. So I think there's a new generation of Wisconsinites who are drinking brandy old-fashioneds.
Okay.
Now, their brandy old-fashioneds may be a little fancier. They're made with cognac, or they're made with aged brandy, or they're made with Luxardo cherries, or Door County cherries instead of just maraschino cherries, but the cocktail is the same.
We're on the phone with Jeanette Hurt. She is the author, compiler of the book, Wisconsin Cocktails. It's really not a subhead. It's kind of a headline above it that says, Brandy Old Fashions, Beer Chasers, and Other Favorites Unique to America's Dairyland. I always have loved the word snit, too, by the way. I'm so glad you had that.
How could I not? And a properly made Bloody Mary is always served with a snit.
Is the word snit a Wisconsin word?
I don't know if it's a Wisconsin word, but I think it is definitely a word that I haven't really heard outside of Wisconsin or perhaps Minnesota.
Yeah, I believe you, because I think I have used it outside of the state, maybe on a coast or two. And they went, excuse me? They thought I was mad.
Well, you're right, because most people, a snit is somebody throwing a hissy fit.
Yes.
But if you go and travel elsewhere, that's the other thing I've always found interesting, is people can tell you're from Wisconsin the way you order an old-fashioned, or if you'll order a Bloody Mary with a snit, or a Bloody Mary and you just get a really sad-looking pickle and or an olive and nothing else. you might be quite disappointed.
I read as much of the newsy parts of the book as I could over the weekend, and truthfully, so we could spend a couple of these programs on the contents of your book. But let's dive into what has been brought up several times already, the official drink, quote-unquote, of Wisconsin, the old-fashioned, or more appropriately, the brandy old-fashioned. There is quite a history behind it as it pertains to Wisconsin and how brandy became so popular. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. The popularity had to do with German ethnicity and a couple other minor factors, but brandy got our attention for the unscientific fact that in the 40s, there was a lot of it coming into Wisconsin.
Yes. Now, there's a lot of stories that talk about it's our ethnic makeup and things like that, but that doesn't explain why we drink more brandy than places that have similar or greater amounts of the same ethnicities that are believed to be responsible for our brandy drinking. Now, the real story about what happened, back in the 1940s, post-World War II, there was a lot of bad booze going around, and not just in Wisconsin. And part of this reason was distilleries voluntarily shut down to ship grain to Europe to feed people.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were shortages. Around the same time that there were shortages, there were some smart Wisconsin distributors. They had found out that there was this cache of brandy.
Mm.
And it was Christian Brothers, actually, and they bought it all up.
Uh-huh.
So in Wisconsin, you could have a cocktail made with rotgut whiskey or horrible rum or good brandy. So what are you going to drink? You're going to drink a cocktail made with good brandy. And then what happened is in the 1950s and 60s, of course, brandy makers took note of the fact that they were selling a lot of brandy here. They started marketing to us.
And we've remained kind of the brandy champions.
Yes, we have.
Okay.
And if you talk to any modern brandy makers, they will all tell you they specifically sell their brandy here. If they're coming up with a newer aged brandy, they sell it here because we know how to drink it. They don't have to explain it. Now, you go to other places, major mixologists on the coast say, well, brandy is the next thing after bourbon. This is going to become a new trend. Well, it's always trended in Wisconsin, and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like I said, you don't have to explain brandy to other places. And this is also kind of interesting. If you go to other cities and other states, they probably don't have brandy behind the bar, a rail drink. There's always a rail brandy here in Wisconsin.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And I'm holding the book, the actual book, in my left hand because there's a quote on page 23 that I wanted to share along the same lines of what we're talking about. It's from a thing published in 1945, and it says, a state liquor monopoly in the Midwest finds itself with enough brandy on hand to float a battleship, which would be an exhilarating experience for the barnacles.
Isn't that funny?
Unquote. I like that. That's a good quote.
I found that in this tiny little news brief called a Wham Doodles.
I love that. A few other tidbits. A trio of other drinks that are iconic to many, the Bloody Mary, the ice cream drinks, the grasshopper and the pink squirrel, and,
yes,
and of course, the seasonal fave, the Tom and Jerry that we talked about. Back to the Bloody Mary for a second. Are you a big fan of the fact that you can buy one of a million different kinds of mixes nowadays? Or do you think the purist does all that on his or her own?
Well, it's kind of like the person who likes to make their own marinara sauce.
Mm-hmm.
They might still have a jar of their favorite canned sauce on hand for when they're running around and don't have time. Personally, I think it's not that hard. If you have a well-stocked pantry, then you can make it yourself and flavor it. But if you are pressed for time or not so inclined, there are plenty of good mixers out there.
Now let's go forward again to the Tom and Jerry. Just hearing about it and talking about it reminds me that I'm curious about where that drink name came from. A couple of guys?
There are a lot of stories about that. And the Tom and Jerry is actually a much older cocktail than the brandy old fashioned. The Tom and Jerry goes back to the 1800s. The earliest print references are in the 1820s in New England.
Huh.
Now the story goes, Professor Jerry Thomas, this gentleman published the very first cocktail book in 1862. He claims that he invented it But the earliest print reference, like I said, was in the 1820s, and it was in Massachusetts. So he was from New England, so likely he learned how to make it there. And then he included it in his cocktail book, and he took credit for it. So he's the first one to actually include a recipe for it, perhaps.
Sure.
But people drank it long before he was making them. And I would also say it migrated, of course, to Wisconsin. And by the 1880s, late October on, that was the start of the Tom and Jerry cocktail season. One of the things that I find interesting about Wisconsin drinking versus elsewhere in the country, every so often you'll go online and see these big national publications and national drinking publications, and they'll talk about a bar, quote-unquote, reviving the Tom and Jerry.
Uh-huh.
It never left here in Wisconsin.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Where did it go?
It never went anywhere.
No.
And one thing that's also interesting is I think our state is one of the very few, if not the only, where you can buy Tom and Jerry batter mixes in the freezer.
Yes. But there's another thing that you can make by yourself fairly easily. So and
yeah.
Keep it in your freezer and have it whenever. Drinks that are named after places. So I have a list here. Manhattan, Alabama Slammer. The daiquiri is actually named after a place, which I didn't know. Moscow Mule, Singapore Sling, etc. Are there any drinks named after Wisconsin places?
You know, I don't think I've heard that. Now, I do know some people have named some of their drinks, and there's some in my book. There's a Wisconsin sidecar a bartender came up with.
Sure.
And I will say this much. Back, I want to say in the 1950s and 60s, I saw in advertisements for brandy, they would call basically a brandy Manhattan the Milwaukee cocktail, like the Manhattan, but better. But that fell out of favor.
Well, I think since we are so good at it, we should get to work naming some drinks after place.
I think we could. We could name something Ashland or the Rhinelander.
Sure.
There could be some really fun cocktails named for cities and locations within the state.
I think that should be a project for mixologists out there to come up
with. You could come up with like a Madison Smash, a Shorewood Highball.
Yeah, or a Sheboygan Alewife. That's a fish, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, you wouldn't probably want a drink that's named that.
I don't think so.
No. Jeanette Hurt on the phone with us. Wisconsin Cocktails is the book. For those, Jeanette, who pass on the alcohol, recipes are available for drinks that kind of taste like their namesake but are minus the hooch.
Yes. I included an entire chapter dedicated to cocktails made with Wisconsin ingredients, but they're non-alcoholic.
Well, it's an interesting book. Each section begins with historic and traditional setup, and then the recipes that fit the section take over from there. And are you working on anything new? Any new books?
I just did the edits to a book called The Unofficial Aldi Cookbook, and I have some ideas, but I haven't written them yet or talked with editors yet for my next drink book.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
And her website is Jeanette Hurt, that's H-U-R-T, .com. Hey, next week, we're going to spend some time with amazing banjo, mandolin, and guitar guy Rick Sampson and his son Eric, also an accomplished guitarist and songwriter. Given all we've been through as a nation this week, I thought you might enjoy Rick's version of an old standard that I hope reminds you of the good old days. Ah, yes, I know that song. Let's try to get some of the same meaning back that it once had. What do you say? Next week, more of the music of Rick and Eric Sampson from the homestead in Trempealeau County. We'll find out a lot about Together Farms. Catherine Thomas brings a guest along. And more, thanks to Dean, Kate, Patrick, and you. You can visit us at WPR.org to find all the Spectrum West programs neatly archived. Come on, keep in touch. Take care of yourself. Wear a mask. Be good to each other. See you next week.